Welcome to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting holiday shows in your theater of the mind. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Later on, it's The Whistler from Christmas Eve 1950. But right now, we continue with the 26-part series of The Cinnamon Bear, now on episode 13, heard on December 11th, 1937.
And here's the Cinnamon Bear.
Well, Judy and Jimmy and the Cinnamon Bear were in a pretty pickle when we saw them last. They found the Crazy Quilt Dragon all right, but he'd been thrown into a short trance, as he called it, by the Wintergreen Witch, who made off with the Silver Star. So there was nothing to do but to try and find her. But what do you think? Nobody knew how to get out of the magic forest and back into the witch's house. Then Jimmy remembered the little whistle which Fifo, the gentle giant, had given him, with instructions to blow it 3 times if help was needed. But Jimmy couldn't blow it loud enough, so Crazy Quilt volunteered for the job and took such a deep breath that he swallowed it. And as Jimmy says...
This is the limit. What'd you have to go and swallow the whistle for?
Couldn't help it. Slipped.
Oh, dear. Now we'll just have to walk and walk, and maybe we'll never be able to get out of this old forest.
What's the matter, Crazy Quilt?
He's got the hiccups. And every time he hiccups, it blows the whistle.
Quick, Crazy Quilt. Do it again. That's swell. You blew it 3 times.
Good. Maybe Fifo will come to our rescue.
Bless my stuffing. I can hear him now.
That's enough, Crazy Quilt. Fifo heard you.
Can't stop. It just keeps...
Here I am, my little friends. Just as I said I'd be. But my gracious, you don't have to blow the whistle so many times.
We're not doing it on purpose, Fifo. The Crazy Quilt Dragon's got it caught in his throat.
And every time he hiccups,
it whistles.
Well, well. I'll fix that. Just a pat on the back.
There it is.
Oh, what an ordeal. Why does everything happen to me?
Because you're always sticking your Crazy Quilt nose in somebody else's business, that's why.
So this is the Crazy Quilt Dragon you were looking for. And did he give you back your Silver Star?
No, he didn't, Fifo. Because the Wintergreen Witch did something magic to him and made him bring it to her.
Crazy Quilt says she's a terrible old witch. Does she scare you, Fifo?
It all depends on what color she is.
That's right. Didn't you say she changed colors, Crazy Quilt?
Definitely. And you didn't believe me, Smarty. She changed from green to purple to red.
Oh, that's bad. When she's all right, she stays green. But when she gets a notion to practice magic, she goes all sorts of colors.
Well, no matter what color she gets, we've got to find her.
Yes, and that's why we called for you, Fifo. We thought maybe you'd be real nice and take us back to the place where we came through the picture frame. We don't know which way to go.
I'd be glad to. Only I'm sorry to see you leave the magic forest. It's awful lonesome here. Maybe you can come back and see me again, huh?
Willikers, I don't see how we can, Fifo, on account of we've got to get our star and get back home before Christmas.
Oh, well, maybe someday you can. All right, everybody. I'll put the dragon on my left shoulder and the rest of you on my right. Up you go.
Whee! We're way up in the air again.
My, this is something new for me. My, you are a whopper of a giant, Fifo. Simply a whopper.
Hold tight. Here we go. Here we are, folks. End of the trip.
What? So soon?
Sure. Fifo's no slowpoke. Only takes a few of his big steps to get you someplace in a hurry.
All right, now. Down you go.
Gee, we're right where we came in, too. I can see right through the trees into the Wintergreen Witch's house.
Sure enough. There's the fireplace and all the pots in front of it.
Well, my friends, I wish I were small enough to go through the picture frame with you, but that's impossible. So I'll just have to say goodbye and good luck.
Goodbye, Fifo. We'll never, never forget you.
You bet. And thanks a million.
Goodbye. And I hope the witch stays green.
Goodbye, Fifo.
All right, now. Steal yourselves, everybody, and through the picture frame.
Okay, Cinnamon Bear. Here I go.
And me.
And reluctantly, I.
The room is empty. Not a soul here.
Splendid, splendid. Oh,
the witch.
Right, my pretty dears, right. Thought I wasn't here, eh?
Hold my hand, Jimmy.
Excuse me, but I just remembered I left the water running in the bathtub. I'll see you later.
Me too. Come on, children, out the door.
It closed itself.
Hurry, back through the picture frame.
Oh, it's nothing but a flat painted picture now.
Oh, trapped, doomed. This is the end.
Jiminy Crickets. Look at the witch. She's changing colors.
Green and blue and purple and red.
Sit down, my dainties. Sit down and make yourselves comfortable, because you'll be here a long time. A long, long time.
What are you going to do, Mrs. Witch?
You'll find out. And don't call me Mrs. Witch.
Please, Mrs. Wintergreen, give us our silver star and let us go.
Yes, please give it back.
We've come an awful long ways to get it.
And after all, madam, what does a wonderful sorceress with your great power want with a paltry Christmas tree ornament?
I want it for my magic forest. That's something I've never had before. I'm going to hang it in the sky over the Black Lake.
Well, if we can't have the star, would you mind if we just sort of moseyed along?
No, you don't. I have other plans, my pretties. Other plans.
Well, I bet you can't do anything to Judy and me, because we belong to the USA. And I bet you can't magic any American citizens, so there.
Besides, we don't believe in witches anyhow. They're just to scare people on Halloween.
So you don't believe the Wintergreen Witch can magic things, eh? I shall demonstrate. First, I open the door. Now, see how beautiful and clear it is outside?
Indeed, and how I'd like to be outside.
Now, I'll close the door. And mumbo jumbo, hubba dubba, woo. Now, I open the door again.
Gee willikers, look!
It's raining cats and dogs.
There. You've heard of it raining cats and dogs, haven't you?
Yes, Mrs. Wintergreen.
Now you've not only heard, but seen it. Do you still think the Wintergreen Witch can magic things?
Oh, no, no. You're truly wonderful. But won't you please let us go?
Yes, pretty please. We haven't done anything to you.
No. But I'm going to do something to you.
Ooh.
There are several things I need around the house or in the magic forest, and you pretties have come just at the right moment. First, I think I'll change you twins into white mice.
Oh, please don't. Not mice. I don't like them at all.
And this crazy quilt dragon will look beautiful after I've changed him into a pincushion.
Oh, agony.
And as for this funny little bear, he'll make a lovely doormat with welcome on his tongue.
Oh, me poor stuffings.
Now be quiet while I prepare my magic.
Jimmy, if we only had something to make her forget about us and the silver star, have you got anything she might like?
Gee, I don't think she'd like my knife. And my swell wristwatch is home in my bureau drawer.
I've got it. Maybe she'd like my little looking glass. Mrs. Wintergreen?
Yes, my pretty dear?
I have something much nicer than the silver star for you, and it's ever so much shinier. Look.
Take it away. Take it away. Don't you know witches can't stand to see their own faces? Take it away.
What a break. Keep on showing it to her, Judy.
No. Take it away. I'll do anything you ask, anything. All right. First, you've got to let us go.
And promise not to do anything to us after we leave.
Oh, yes. But take that dreadful-looking glass with you.
And you've got to give us back our silver star.
Oh, even that. Here.
Oh, Jimmy, at last we've got it back.
Open the door, witch, and make it snappy.
And foo for you, Mrs. Wintergreen. Come along, children.
Isn't it swell, Judy? We've got the star and everything.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, but we can't stop to admire it now. We got to rush right down to the shore and get back across the root beer ocean. Come on, hurry, everybody.
Do you think you can swim us all the way back, Crazy Quilt?
Absolutely. I'm plenty full of corks to manage it. Climb aboard.
I think I'd better carry the star.
But suppose a wave washes it away or another whale swallows it.
Pardon the suggestion, but I've an ideal place for it. My hind pocket, the one under that big orange patch. It's waterproof and has a zipper.
Okay, Crazy Quilt, unzip.
With pleasure. And in it goes. Zip again. And safe and sound. And hold on, my friends, for it's cheerio and into the root beer ocean.
You sure made good time, Crazy Quilt. Here we are back on the Maybeland mainland.
I can hardly believe it.
We're ever so grateful, Crazy Quilt.
Oh, not at all. But now that we're all hunky-dory, I must ask you to excuse me while I sit down and rest a bit from my strenuous swim.
Sure. You've got it coming to you, all right.
Oh, I think this would be a lovely spot right here in the lee of this rock. There. Now I'll just lean back and...
What was that?
Oh, my friend. Oh, I'm blushing red. Well, behold the star.
Willikers, it's busted.
In a dozen pieces.
And that's what I call very, very bad luck. After all the perilous adventures our friends have been through in order to recapture their silver star, this is really a blow. A lost star is bad enough, but a broken one is terrible. Just the same, I'll be with you next time to see what they're going to do about it.
The Cinnamon Bear, on Tuned to Yesterday, Part 13 of 26, from December 11th, 1937. The Cinnamon Bear series featured many now-famous voices that are familiar to old-time radio fans and who were radio royalty in their own right, like Gil Gordon from Fibber McGee and Molly and later The Lucy Show, who plays Willie the Shark, Elliot Lewis, who starred as Remley on The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show and who directed the series Suspense as the Roly-Poly Policeman and Mr. Presto the Magician, Hanley Stafford, who is the daddy to Baby Snooks on the air as Snapper Snick the Crocodile, even the doctor from Radio's Gunsmoke, Howard McNear, as Samuel the Seal, in addition to the main character Buddy Duncan, a former vaudeville comedian as the Cinnamon Bear, and Barbara Jean Wong as Judy. And although there are conflicting stories on this point, it is of this producer's opinion that at the time of this recording that an old fact remains true, that the identity of the actor who portrayed Jimmy Barton is still a mystery to old-time radio fans and aficionados, as it has been for many decades. This is an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now time for the next broadcast in this hour of The Cinnamon Bear, Part 14 of 26, heard on the 12th of December, 1937.
And here's the Cinnamon Bear.
I guess we're all pretty anxious to hear about Judy and Jimmy and their friends Cinnamon Bear and Crazy Quilt Dragon. For a while, it looked very much like the Wintergreen Witch was going to change them into a pincushion, a doormat, and two white mice. But they got away, and what was even nicer, got their precious silver star. The Crazy Quilt Dragon tucked it into his hind pocket for safekeeping, and they all climbed on his back and swam away from the island of Obi. But when they reached the mainland, the worst thing in the world happened. Crazy Quilt sat down to rest and broke the silver star into a dozen pieces. That's very, very bad, and you can just imagine what Judy has to say.
Oh, dear. We might just as well never have found the silver star as to have it broken.
Gee, Willikers, yes. Especially after all the things we did to get it back.
If you had to sit down, Crazy Quilt, why pick a rock to sit on?
Oh, I am abject. I'm speechless, but I beg you to realize that my mistake was unintentional.
Well, we know you didn't mean to do it. But gee, Crazy Quilt, couldn't you have used your head a little bit?
Well,
don't go picking on poor Crazy Quilt. Of course he didn't mean to break the star, but making him feel bad isn't going to do any good.
Oh,
dear. We might just as well have Patty O'Cinnamon take us back to the attic again.
Yeah, I guess so.
Goodbye, Crazy Quilt. Thanks anyway for saving us from the Inkaboos and carrying us across the Root Beer Ocean.
Yes, thanks for that, Crazy Quilt. You're a good dragon at heart.
How are we going to get back to the attic, Cinnamon Bear? The airplane is still at the bottom of Looking Glass Valley.
Maybe when Crazy Quilt has rested a little, he'll carry us a piece.
Oh, gladly. Anything to help atone for my frightful carelessness. Anything to... Wait.
What is it, Crazy Quilt? Have you got a pain?
A pain? No, I have a plan.
That's generally the same thing with you.
There's something that might be done yet.
Sure, and you've done everything that can be done, Crazy Quilt. You and your nonsense.
Just a minute, my feisty friend in the fur pajamas. Let me say my say.
Very well. What's on your alleged mind?
Why don't we go and see Melissa?
Splendid! Now, why didn't I think of that?
Who's Melissa?
Haven't you heard of her? Why, she's our queen, the ruler of Maybeland.
What could she do?
What can't she do, you mean? She's wonderful, so kind and generous. Everybody loves her.
That's swell. But what could she do about the Silver Star?
Anything, everything. She has wonderful powers. Nothing is impossible to her. Why, do you know, once upon a time, I had the great misfortune to fall into a lemonade wishing well, and all my beautiful colors ran together.
I'd sure like to have seen you then.
I shall overlook your remark. Oh, I was a mess. I thought surely I'd never be able to hold up my head in society. But I went to Melissa, and she restored me to my natural beauty and splendor.
She certainly has a marvelous reputation, all right. I've always intended to go to court sometime and see her for myself, but I never quite got around to it.
Oh, goody. Maybe she can help us. Where does Melissa live?
Oh, she lives in her palace in the capital of Maybeland. That's capital M. A bit southish of the Lollipop Mountains, right in the middle of Marshmallow Meadows.
Maybe she'll know some way to have the star all put together again.
I'm sure she will. Will you take us there, Crazy Quilt?
Certainly. I'm quite as good on land as on water.
Everybody help me pick up the pieces of the star. Jimmy, let me have your hanky. It's bigger than mine.
Okay. Here it is.
Ah, here are some pieces.
Yeah, and here are some more.
I think Jimmy and I have all the rest. Hold out your hanky, Jimmy.
Okay.
There.
All right, now, let's get started. Climb on, everybody.
Up you go, Judy. Up, Jimmy. Well, we're on. Outdo yourself, Crazy Quilt. Gallop of yous never galloped before.
This is the anteroom to the Queen's audience chamber. We'll have to wait here until time for us to see the Grand Wunkie.
My goodness. How many more do we have to see before we get to see Melissa?
Yes, I never saw so many of them. Whatchamacallums?
Secretaries.
Yes, things like that.
Oh, but you must remember, this is a royal court. You have to expect such things. After all, Melissa is the queen, and she's much too busy to bother with people unless they have really important business with her.
Who'd you say we had to see now?
The Grand Wunkie. He's sort of head of all the ceremonies and presents everybody to Melissa.
I wish he'd hurry. My stuffing's getting very tired.
Oh, I don't mind waiting so much. It's so beautiful. I like to look down that big staircase and see all the people passing up and down.
Oh, here you are, here you are. So sorry to keep you waiting, but you know how it is, so much business. Dear, 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 dear. Oh, you're not in court costume.
What's that?
It's what you wear when you come to see Melissa.
Well, never mind. It can't be helped now. I'll ask her to overlook the attire, inasmuch as you are unacquainted with court etiquette.
What does he mean?
He means that he's going to ask Melissa to skip it.
Oh, dear, 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 dear. Now let's see how will we arrange this. You're the crazy quill dragon, are you not? I'm sure I've seen you before. I'm very good at remembering places. I mean faces. That's my job. Now, where were we? Awfully nice of you to drop in and all that. Must come again sometime.
I'm Judy.
I'm Jimmy.
And I'm the Cinnamon Bear.
That's us, and we're very anxious to see Melissa. Is there anything special we have to do?
Oh, dear, 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 yes. The bow, you know, the bow, so.
I feel awfully silly doing that.
You don't have to. Just be polite, and that's all that's necessary.
And of course, I must announce you. Now, let's see. What formation would look best? Let me see. The little girl first. Yes. Then I think the boy slightly behind her with the bear. Then the crazy quill dragon bringing up the rear guard.
Bringing up what? Does he have to carry something?
No. He's to stand behind you.
Well, why don't you say that in the first place?
I dislike hurrying you, Grand Wonky, but our time is short and our business very important. Now, you just sort of forget a few formalities and announce us to Her Majesty like a good Wonky.
I think everything is in order. Do you mind if I adjust your green bow, little bear?
I thank you to keep your hands off me bow, and me name is Patty O'Cinnamon, if you please.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. I think we may enter now.
It's about time.
Ouvrez la porte!
What's that mean, that ouvrez, well, what you just said?
Well, that's French for open the door.
Well, why didn't you just say open the door instead of that French stuff?
Because this happens to be a French door and won't open unless you speak French. So there. Ouvrez la porte! My, those hinges need oiling dreadfully. Must make a note about that. See about oil for hinges. Now, are we all hunky-bunky?
Yes, Wonky.
Dudley, the fanfare. Oh, thank you, Dudley. That was lovely, thank you. And now, friends, you may enter the presence of Queen Melissa of Maybeland.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. Isn't she beautiful, Jimmy?
You bet. Why, she's nearly as pretty as Mother, I'd say.
Look at her throne. It's all shiny.
All gold, children. 18 carats, solid gold.
It looks like there's something shiny all about her, too. It must be more magic.
It is. That protects her from anything touching her. Nothing could get close enough to hurt her.
I sure never saw anything like this before.
Will you please come closer?
Her Majesty desires you to approach. Be sure you don't go too close, however. Your Majesty, may I present Miss Judy?
How do you do?
Fine, thanks, but we...
Mr. Jimmy.
I'm so happy to see you.
And we're glad to see you.
And this is...
The Crazy Quilt Dragon, of course. How are you?
Oh, very well, Your Majesty. Thank you.
And last but not least...
Well, who is this fuzzy little person with the green ribbon round his neck? Who are you, little friend?
I'm the Cinnamon Bear with the shoe-button eyes. And I'm helping these children recover a prize. It's a silvery star that was fashioned, you see, for the very tip-top of a big Christmas tree. Though we've hunted low and we've hunted high, we cannot get it back. No matter how we try, our most crazy quilt dragon made off with it first. Then away laid it up, but that isn't the worst. Oh, it's been through 100 adventures since then. We just lose it and find it and lose it again. So we've looked and looked till we're almost blue. And if you'll help us out, we much obliged to you.
So you see, Your Majesty?
Call me Melissa, won't you? We're all going to be friends, and friends shouldn't be too formal.
That suits me. All this wonky business about bowing and everything.
I know how you feel, Jimmy. But I must give the Grand Wonky something to do. He'd feel very unhappy otherwise.
Well, you see, Melissa, the Cinnamon Bear told you part about what happened to our lovely silver star, but lots of things happened to it after that.
And the last thing was, the Wintergreen Witch cast a spell on me and forced me to steal the star and take it to her.
The Wintergreen Witch? Grand Wonky, make a note that I must take up the case of the Wintergreen Witch at my next council meeting. She's been practicing magic without a license.
No, dear, dear me. Yes, Your Majesty. Fix witch. Good and proper.
She was going to change us into things. Then I showed her a looking glass, and she got awful scared and let us go.
And Crazy Quill took us across the Root Beer Ocean, but...
But he sat down on the star and broke it into a dozen pieces.
So we thought maybe you could help us get it fixed.
Of course I can help you.
You can? Oh, that's wonderful.
Now you just listen very carefully to everything I say, and your silver star will be restored.
Well, that's quite the best news Judy and Jimmy have had since they started out on their adventurous trip through Maybeland. Let's be sure to listen next time and find out how Queen Melissa plans to get the broken silver star back into one piece.
The Cinnamon Bear on Tuned to Yesterday, Part 14 of 26. Heard on December 12, 1937. This is an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Now we close with this broadcast of The Whistler called Three Wise Guys, a CBS episode from Christmas Eve 1950.
And now stay tuned for the program that has rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. The Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Transcribed by the Signal Oil Company for Christmas Eve to enable the entire production staff of the Whistler to spend Christmas Eve at home with their families. Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invites you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by the Whistler.
Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now, for the Signal Oil Company, the Whistler brings you a most unusual story, one of the most heartwarming stories of our times, especially appealing this Christmas Eve. Three Wise Guys.
T'was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Even Broadway, that glamorous avenue of make-believe in faraway New York, seemed empty, deserted. Most cafes and eating places were closed, but the doors of an occasional refuge for those hardy souls who prefer to walk alone were still open. Such a place was Good Time Charlie's Bar on 49th Street, where on another Christmas Eve, a series of unusual events began, ending in one of the most unusual stories Good Time Charlie had ever listened to. At the moment, Charlie is listening to the voice of a man named Al.
As is well known to one and all, Charlie, I am not one to complain. But it strikes me that Broadway would bring very little tonight on the open market.
I know you 10, maybe 15 years, Al. Until now, I don't know you know there is an open market.
Oh, for the past 12 months that I know of, I am 100% legitimate. Honest, legitimate Al.
Want another rock candy and rye without the rock candy?
I very seldom indulge in alcoholic beverages. But in answer to your question, yes.
Haven't seen you for a year, Al. Want to run over that part again where you tell me you're playing it straight for the past 12 months?
As of last Christmas Eve, I am a 100% honest ticket scalper. I do not make a killing, but I get that good warm feeling that comes with being 100% legit.
It feels good to play it straight?
Cozy.
you want to tell me about it, Al?
I do not mind if I do, good time, Charlie. It all begins a year ago tonight, right here in your strictly high-class drum. Blondie Swanson was here with me, remember?
Yeah, I think I do remember, Al.
Now, Blondie Swanson is one of the gentry which operates on that side of the law as very few call right, though Blondie himself always feels this is a matter of opinion. But Blondie is not concerned with his racket a year ago tonight. You are busy chauffeuring the bar, good time, Charlie, so maybe you do not notice the sad scene. Yep, it is last year, just about this same time, when Blondie comes in here, his big frame pretzeled with grief.
Hello, Al.
Well, hiya, Blondie. I see you are not so happy tonight. Why not join me in a medicinal rock candy and rye? Without the rock candy. I am fighting off a touch of grip.
Okay, Al. I got a bad case of memories tonight. If I can pack away the grip, maybe it can take a load off my memories.
Hey, Charlie, two more rock candies and rice, without the rock candy.
I'll slide them down.
Are these conversational memories, Blondie, or shall we give them to Clint?
You recall a doll named Clarabel Cobb, Al.
Miss Clarabel Cobb? Of course I do. She is well known to one and all on Broadway as a leading light with George White's Scandal some years back.
Yeah. Well, Christmas Eve is an anniversary for me. It was on Christmas Eve that Clarabel left me to marry an honest guy in Akron, Ohio.
Here you are.
Oh, drink up, Lonnie. Up to now, I remember Miss Clarabel Cobb as a doll with glass A judgment. Why did she put distance between her and you?
Well, Clarabel was a gal that didn't care as much about how much money you had as she did where you got it. She felt that my role was ample but tainted.
And this is why she puts on the exit?
Right. I can see now that she was right, but now it's too late.
But there must be other dolls as beautiful and desirable, and not such quizmasters as to where the scratch comes from.
I'll never look at another doll again, Al. They're for other guys.
Hey, Blondie. Blondie Swanson.
Well, if it ain't the Dutchman. Why, look, Al.
Al, Blondie, Yuletide's all around.
Well, I cannot believe my eyes, Dutchman. I have not seen you in these parts for maybe a full calendar or so.
I've been detained in the West. Oh, it's a sad story. And I can see that all you two guys need is one more sad story. But you're not going to hear none. I got good news for you.
And you have come to the right place, Dutchman. I always get kind of down on Christmas Eve.
What I'm going to tell you will give you a big lift. Blondie, you and me have pulled a few fast deals together. But I got one tonight that's the softest touch of all. Oh, you can listen, Al. We'll cut you in, too.
I have turned down soft touches before. But not wishing to be rude, I will hear you out.
Well, some months back, three other guys and me knocked off a tin safe in a factory over in Pennsylvania. It was a cinch haul on account of we received a dead center tip. The tip was on the level. So we stash 50 G's in our grip sack and get set to hit the open road.
Something detained you?
The cops. After hot blasting from both sides, I find myself alone on the lam with 50 G's in the grip sack. But it's not a clean getaway, and I figure it's better to find a hiding place for the dough, not wanting to be caught with the goods.
I am beginning to get the idea. You're suggesting that the three of us go for this dough tonight and cut it three ways.
That's the idea. It's in an unpopulated barn under the floorboards. When I decide to go get it, the first guy I think of is you, Blondie. How about it?
I must admit, I got no other plans, Dutchman. Nice of you to think of me. Count me in.
How about you, Al?
I am not generally known as a spoilsport, but this prospect frankly holds no appeal for me. I do not wish to join the party.
This your final answer?
Yes, Dutchman, you may quote me. I will not go with you. Charlie, that's the way it went. I am certain I will not leave your bistro that night. I am negative to the whole scheme, and I'm nixing it loud and clear to one and all. So imagine my surprise at some later point to find myself warm and cozy in the back seat of the Dutchman's ancient philosophy, dogging it through the snow-covered countryside. The whole setting is so peaceful, I am catching small doses of snooze. But in between times, I cannot help but overhear the upfront conversation of Blondie and the Dutchman.
You sure this is the right road, Dutchman?
Certainly, I'm sure. I can fly this road blind if necessary.
You are not flying blind now, so you must have noticed that the radiator is percolating again. I think we better stop and take on another load of snow.
Guess we'll have to. But I sure hate these delays.
Hey, Dutchman. Listen. Must be coming from that little church.
Yeah. Come on, help with the snow and the radiator.
Sounds real pretty, that kind of singing.
You think that's pretty? Well, you hear real music. The kind money makes when it's crisp.
Hey, Blondie, Dutchman, where are we?
In Pennsylvania, Al. Not far from that barn where I stashed the factory payroll.
How can you tell? I, for one, see very little but darkness around and about.
I got to agree with Al, Dutchman. I got a feeling we're lost. Maybe we better give the whole scheme up.
You two give up easy. I tell you, I know for certain we're close to that barn. I can tell by that big fat star I've been following for the last few miles.
Oh, yeah. I am seeing a small light ahead. But I observe if this is a star, it is hanging very low to the ground.
I still got a feeling we are lost. Why don't we go back to Good Time Charlie's, which is a lot easier to find?
I don't care how low this star is hanging. I know it's leading me straight. I'm running this show, so you two better seal up. There, look. I'm right as rain. This is a barn.
I do not wish to start an exchange of words, but that star you follow turns out to be nothing more than a light from the window of said barn.
Okay. So somebody's living in the barn. I'll take care of them if they're too hard to get along with.
I vote for getting out of here.
I am not dressed to call on strangers myself.
Come on, then cut the gab. Besides, maybe there's only animals in the barn. I don't see no human footprints in the snow, except ours. Look, I'll be doggone. Look through that window, Blondie. Is that a doll in there?
Let me see. Yeah, she's a doll. Not only that, I don't think she's feeling in the pink either. Well, now that we are here, let us go inside and see if there's anything we can do for her.
I don't care nothing about a sick doll. I want to lay my mitts on that grip sack with a 50 G's in it. Come on.
Who's that? Who are you?
We mean no harm. We... Well, for if it ain't Miss Clarabel Cobb in person.
Yes, Al, that isolated barn in the snow-swept Pennsylvania countryside, so far removed from Good Time Charlie's Bar, where you're now enjoying Charlie's rock candy and rye without the rock candy. Held a surprising development for you, Blondie Swanson, and the Dutchman, didn't it? The three of you had driven there that Christmas Eve a year ago to claim the $50,000 payroll the Dutchman had hidden there. The presence of Miss Clarabel Cobb in the barn at your arrival was something not even her ex-boyfriend, Blondie Swanson, could fathom immediately. And you were even more puzzled than Blondie, weren't you, Al? Only the Dutchman seemed to have the faintest understanding of what it's all about. So, you turn to the Dutchman.
Dutchman, I am not understanding all this. Why do you not inform us?
Listen, Al, you and Blondie better clear out of here for a while. Take a walk in the snow. I guess I'll have to take care of this doll.
Look, Dutchman, I haven't seen Clarabel for a long time. If you think I'm going to leave her now and go for a walk with Al, you are nuts.
Besides which, Dutchman, this doll is clearly at grips with some strange malady. I do not think it is polite the three of us should visit in this manner at this time.
Listen, I came here to get 50 G's, not a sick doll and a lot of lip from you two. This won't take long, so blow.
But Dutchman...
I'm getting fed up with you, Blondie. I know what I'm doing. I've delivered 7 of the 8 kids my wife had, and I never needed no doctor. This one will be a cinch. Now, will you get out of here?
I cannot help but say this is quite a night for surprises, Blondie.
Yeah.
I, for one, can take winter sports or leave them to someone else.
Al.
Yeah, Blondie.
We could take the Dutchman's car there. You think Clarabel will be better off if we get her a doc?
Well, I am new in this racket, Blondie. But if you want an inexperienced opinion, I will say...
What was that?
What? shut! Well, Blondie, I am new in this racket, but if you want an inexperienced opinion, I will say Miss Clarabelle Cobb is a cinch mother. Come on, let's get back to the barn.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't cry, Clarabelle. No sense crying.
Blondie.
I know. If all of a sudden I found myself with a brand new kid, I wouldn't be crying. Especially since it's such a beautiful kid.
You really think he's beautiful, Blondie?
Oh, I sure do. He's sleeping, huh?
Uh-huh. Bless his heart. If he only gets a break.
Oh, don't worry about him, Clarabelle. A beautiful kid like that, they love him in Akron.
Oh, Blondie, there's so much I want to tell you.
Yeah, but maybe you ought to straighten out yourself, huh?
Not till I tell you, Blondie. You've got to know about everything. Why I'm staying here in Dr. Kelton's barn. About Joe, my husband. He's in such trouble, Blondie. He's in jail.
Come on, Al. Let's go find a grip sack. I know right where it is. Look, Al, this is more like it. Yeah, it's all there, $50,000.
A very likely sight.
This is all that counts, a fat swatch of cash. Especially if it's mine. Come on, let's get Blondie and clean out of this barn.
You ain't going anywhere with that dough, Dutchman.
You want to play that again, Blondie?
Same song. I said you ain't going anywhere with that dough.
Hey, you tell me what he said, Al. I don't like what I'm hearing.
Blondie has mouthed the same identical words two times around, Dutchman. And I, for one, get the impression he means it.
I do. You didn't tell us the whole story of this dough and how you came by it, Dutchman.
Now, listen, Blondie.
No, I've been listening. I heard everything you said about this factory payroll job you pulled, and you never did say anything about trussing up the bookkeeper at the factory that night.
So what?
Not only that, you make it look like it's the inside job and leave the bookkeeper to take the rap.
So they got to nail somebody for it. Why are you building such a case for this cluck bookkeeper?
This cluck bookkeeper, Joseph Hatcher, happens to be Clarabelle's husband. That's his kid you deliver, Dutchman.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Did Miss Clarabelle Cobb tell you all this, Blondie?
She told me plenty. This Joseph Hatcher's been cooling in the clink ever since. He was doing a special bookkeeping job for his factory. Came here from Akron to do it. He's a right guy, an honest guy. Or can you understand that, Dutchman?
Here, Blondie, here's something honest I understand. Hey. Yeah, a gun.
Easy, Dutchman.
Shut up, Al. Now, look, Blondie, I've been patient with you. I know you're soft for this doll, and that's your business. But you're interfering with mine, Blondie, and I don't like that. Now, let's get out of here with the dough and quick. I said, come on, let's get going.
Dutchman, please put the iron away. It is not in keeping with the season to pull a heater on Blondie. In addition to which, the shouting is apt to wake that kid, who is a pretty tired character like his mama.
Well, now you're going soft, Al. What's with you two?
Listen, Dutchman. Clarabelle's husband don't know she's living in this barn. When she heard they'd sorted him away on a bum rap, she came here to try to help him. Then she found out she was going to have a kid, and she looked up a doc here, a guy named Kelton. Clarabelle's got no dough. But Doc Kelton gives her first-rate care all up to now. Even fixes it so she can stay in his barn. It is not great, but it beats living in a snowbank.
Stow it, will you?
The heater, Dutchman. Hide it, huh?
Yeah, okay. But I'm still running the show, wise guys. And this is what we do. Blondie, here's the grip sack. Take my crate out there and find this Doc Kelton character. Pay him off for what he's already done for the doll. Give him some more for taking care of her and the kid from here on in. Then bring the grip sack back here, and we'll blow.
Yeah, you bet, Dutchman.
And you can tell this doctor a couple of things for me. Tell him to get Clarabelle and the kid to a hospital where they belong.
Sure, Dutchman, sure.
And tell him that till now we didn't need no doc, that the Dutchman took care of things perfect, and that Mama and kid are doing nice. Real nice.
It was almost midnight on Christmas Eve at Good Time Charlie's Bar on West 49th Street. As Al continued his amazing account of the story of that other Christmas Eve that crossed the lives of Blondie Swanson, Miss Clarabelle Cobb and her newborn son, the Dutchman, and his gripsack containing $50,000. As Al continued talking to Good Time Charlie, a faraway look came into his eyes.
So you see, Good Time Charlie, it is no more than small wonder that since all this takes place a year ago this very night, me, Blondie, and the Dutchman have settled down to 100% legitimate endeavors.
Yeah, sure, and why not? A three-way split on almost 50 stolen G's is a cinch beginning to this straight and narrow.
You are laboring, as they say, under a misapprehension, Good Time Charlie. I see now where it is only fair I tell you the rest of this story. After Blondie makes the deal with Doc Kelton to get Miss Clarabelle Cobb and her brand new kid out of that bond and into a Class A hospital arrangement, the three of us are once again in the Dutchman's hot rod, beating it along the streets of some pint-sized burg in Pennsylvania, thinking to leave this territory for them as once.
You know, maybe age is catching up with me. I ought to feel great right now. We still got nearly 50,000 clams in that gripsack, and somehow I don't feel great at all. You did bring the gripsack back from Doc Kelton's, Blondie.
Yeah, sure I did, Dutchman. The gripsack's in the back seat with Al.
Funny. It don't feel good. And it should.
Perhaps a touch of rock candy and rye, without the rock candy, would warm your heart, Dutchman.
Oh, maybe so. Pass up the bottle.
I am willing to do this, but the bottle will be of small comfort, as it is empty.
Oh, well, thanks for nothing. Oh, well, I'll just nudge the motor and we'll blow this burg. Get back to native territory. New York ought to look pretty good.
Hey, better slow down, Dutchman. The law is gaining on you.
Oh, great. Never saw such a night in my life.
That red light back there was no Christmas tree ornament. You should have stopped.
Sorry, officer.
And you're in a church zone, clearly marked for 20 miles an hour. 40 is too much.
Was hurrying home for Christmas, officer.
Carrying toys for the kiddies in this tub, huh? I'll bet. I better have a look around. Oh, what's in this gripsack?
Oh, why, nothing, officer. As empty a gripsack as you'll ever run into.
Yeah.
No need to open it. It's empty.
Well, you're right about that, mister. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
Easy, Dutchman.
But you sure it's empty?
Sure, I'm sure. Weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Sure, I was sure. I just wanted you to be sure.
Yeah. Carrying nothing but empties, huh? You guys empty this bottle all by yourselves?
This bottle is once full of medicine, officer. I myself have been warding off a touch of the grip. I am now in the pink, as the saying goes.
Oh, wise guys, huh? Three wise guys. You know, if it weren't practically Christmas, I'd haul you in. Come on now, get out of our town. Oh, yeah, and Merry Christmas, three wise guys.
Yeah, same to you.
Dutchman, I...
You know, Blondie, a while back you accused me of not telling you the whole story of that factory payroll job. Seems to me you forgot to tell me something pretty important, too. What is it about that gripsack being empty of nearly 50 G's that I ought to know?
Well, I figured to fill you in, Dutchman. You see...
Hey, look, Blondie. Dutchman, it's that same little church.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know something? It's a miracle. I don't know yet what happened to that nearly 50 G's in the gripsack, but if that copper had caught us with that dough, we'd be on our way to the clink right now.
An astute observation.
Yeah. Well, you see, Dutchman, when I called on Doc Kelton tonight, I left all the dough with him, the whole 50 G's. I told him to give it back where it belongs. I told him enough more that the doc is sure he can spring Clarabelle's husband out of jail. So him and Clarabelle and the new kid can be together.
Say, this Doc Kelton is the right guy.
Oh, I'll say he is. Well, he even agreed to give us a head start for the Pennsylvania border before he notifies the law.
This is the right guy.
Yeah, and we better oblige the Doc and ourselves by making a border ahead of the cops. you know, that copper was right. Three wise guys, he called us. If we wasn't pretty wise, we'd have had all that cash on us when he pulled us over to the curb. I think it's a good idea we stay right on being three wise guys. I'm through stretching my luck. From here on in, I'm going to play it straight. And I'm still running a show, so you two wise guys are going straight with me. Okay?
Okay.
Agreed.
Wonder how far it is to the border. They got a lot of funny little burgs here in Pennsylvania. What was that one we just left, Blondie?
Oh, I saw a signboard back there, Ways. That burg is known as Bethlehem.
Before Christmas, in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, three wise guys were strangely touched by the spirit of the season. A spirit born in another Bethlehem nearly 2,000 years ago. And tonight, on the eve of another Christmas, may we hope that this same eternal spirit will someday bring to wise guys throughout the world the understanding that the future of the peoples of Earth rests in goodwill toward all men.
The Whistler on Tuned to Yesterday from December 24th, 1950 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonier. Happy holidays.